You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A short documentary called A Night at the Garden was nominated for an Academy Award last night. It's a haunting look at a forgotten bit of American history in the days before World War II. Here is WPR's Judith Sears-Poisson.
Marshall Curry is the filmmaker behind the short documentary A Night at the Garden. Marshall, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So your film, A Night at the Garden, is a 7-minute compilation of archival footage from a gathering of the German-American Bund at Madison Square Garden in New York City in 1939. How did you first become aware of this gathering?
I was at dinner with a friend of mine who was writing a screenplay that takes place in New York in 1939. And he told me that there had been a rally that year in which 20,000 Americans filled Madison Square Garden to celebrate Nazism. And I didn't believe him at the time, actually, until I got home that night and looked it up. And I got an archival researcher who was a friend to start digging around, and he found some footage in the National Archive and some in UCLA's archive and Grinberg Archive. And so we gathered it, and when I saw it, I just couldn't believe it.
And were those 20,000 people in Madison Square Garden all members of the German-American Bund, or who were they?
Well, they were supporters at some level of the Bund or of the Bund's philosophy. So it's kind of incredible to think that there could be 20,000 Americans, New Yorkers in a pretty progressive city that would come out to support fascism and anti-Semitism. And unfortunately, when there's 20,000 that come out for a rally, you know that there are a lot more than that that are supportive, but just couldn't get a babysitter that night.
For those who haven't seen it yet, describe what this looked like.
Well, it's very surreal. The film starts with a shot of the garden, and you think, oh, well, maybe this is going to be about a basketball game or a hockey game. And then we go into the marquee of Madison Square Garden, and it describes it as a pro-America rally. And so maybe you think, well, this is going to be some patriotic gathering. And when you get inside, you see that there are American flags everywhere. Behind the stage, there's a 30-foot portrait of George Washington. But when you look closer, you realize that there are swastikas on either side, and that the people, the thousands of people who are marching into the hall, are carrying American flags, but also flags with swastikas. And then a speaker takes the stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, fellow American patriots,
and starts attacking the press and demonizing minorities, and eventually a protester runs out on stage and is beaten up.
Tell us about that protester. Who was that?
His name was Isidore Greenbaum. He was just a Jewish plumber's assistant from Brooklyn, just as a 20-something-year-old, went down to the rally to see what this was all about, and was so shocked by what he saw that he ran out on stage to try to say something and was beaten up and thrown off stage and eventually arrested. And the next day, according to the New York Times, at his hearing, the magistrate who was sentencing him said to him, "Don't you realize that someone could have been hurt?" And Isidore Greenbaum replied that, "Don't you realize that someone's going to be hurt by the things that were being said up there?" And of course, this is 1939. We know what happened in the next few years.
Your film is presented with no added narration, so you're really letting what we see and hear tell the story without additional context or analysis. How did you decide that that would be the most effective approach?
Well, when I first saw the footage, my first instinct was to make a traditional historical documentary where you have historians provide context and you understand what's going on. And almost on a whim, I decided to try editing it without any explanation. So almost like a Verite documentary, or like most movies where nobody interrupts to tell you what you're seeing. And I discovered that it had a real power. It pulled the audience in as you're watching this stuff, and you're thinking, what is this? How did this happen? How did I never know about this? And those questions draw the audience in and engage them more deeply than maybe it would have if everything had been delivered like a tidy history lesson.
I pledge undivided allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And now we turn to Mark D. Van Els. He's a professor of history at Queensborough Community College of the City University of New York. He's a Wisconsin native and received his PhD in history from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So, Mark, have you watched this film, A Night at the Garden?
Yes, I have watched the film. It was very interesting, and I suppose, like a lot of Americans, what I was immediately brought back to was the Charlottesville episode. And it seemed to me you could draw some parallels between what we've seen recently and what was in that film. Some of those issues are still very timely, unfortunately.
Well, tell us more about the German-American Bund on the national level to start with.
Yeah. All right. Well, it really has its origins with the Nazi movement in Germany, which began to emerge in the 1920s. Germany had been defeated in the First World War. Its economy was ravaged, and it was undergoing a great deal of political turmoil. There was a strong communist movement that was beginning to develop in Germany, and the rise of the communist movement in turn led to the rise of the fascist movement, the Nazi Party. Many of the people who would later become activists in the German-American Bund in the United States had been in the German army during the First World War, had participated in some of the political street fighting that occurred in Germany immediately after the war, and they emigrated to America to, like most immigrants do, I suppose, have a better life. But when they came, they oftentimes brought their Nazi ideology with them. They started to form small pro-Nazi groups, actually in coordination with officials back in Germany. And then when Hitler took power in 1933, these smaller groups came together to form something called the Friends of the New Germany, which created a rift between the U.S. and German governments because there was a Nazi-affiliated movement right here in the United States. So the Friends of the New Germany was sort of rebranded, as we would say today, and it becomes the German-American Bund, or America Deutscher Volksbund, as it would be in German. This new organization was not affiliated with the Nazi Party, at least officially. Membership was limited to American citizens, and so there were no foreign nationals in the organization. But of course, the organization still kept its pro-Nazi sympathies.
And of course, here in Wisconsin, especially southeastern Wisconsin, there was a very large German population. Who among our fellow Wisconsinites were drawn to the Bund's message?
Well, I'm glad to say not that many. It was mostly those people who had immigrated to America after the First World War. Something like 90% of known Bund members were recent immigrants to the United States. The Bund hoped to infiltrate the more traditional German-American communities, the sports clubs, the singing organizations, and that led to a big rift within the German-American community itself. At first, the larger German-American community tried to ignore the problem, but when the Bund got more assertive, when it became more publicly visible, that led to an open break among German-Americans.
The Bund also ran a youth camp in Wisconsin, in Grafton, called Camp Hindenburg. What went on there?
The Bund, as it was organized, bore some striking similarities to the Nazi Party in Germany itself. There was, for example, something called the Ordnungsdienst, or Ordered Division, much like the stormtroopers you found in Nazi Germany with the jack boots and the brown shirts and all these sorts of things. And in Germany, infamously, there was something called the Hitler Youth, the Hitler Jugend, and there was that equivalent in the German-American Bund as well. It was called the Jugendschaft. The Bund liked to portray it as the equivalent of the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts. You know, we're getting the kids out of the city and into God's free air and all these types of things, but they're also learning about Nazi ideology. So it was remarkably like the Hitler Youth back in Germany.
What effect did America's entrance into World War II have on the Bund?
Well, if you go back even to 1939, one of the main reasons why the Bund grew as much as it did was fear of communism. And just before World War II started in Europe, Hitler signed a deal with the Soviet Union. And so that sort of took the wind out of their anti-communist sails, I suppose you could say. That was one of the main reasons why the Bund was growing. With Hitler's deal with Stalin, then that was sort of taken off the table. Another factor factor, I think, is that Germany was a rising power and posed a threat to the United States. So this is also the time, let's talk about 1938, 1939, this is when Austria is absorbed into the German Reich, the Munich Conference appeasement. And as Germany starts to look more and more threatening to the United States, a lot of other Americans began to look askance at the German-American Bund. And then, of course, once America enters the war, many of these people they lose their citizenship, some sent off to internment camps and things like that. But by 1941, the Bund was already really on the ropes. It was after the Second World War begins in Europe that the Bund really begins to show a very sharp decline.
Earlier, you mentioned the white nationalists who were demonstrating in Charlottesville, Virginia, and with tragic consequences. Do you see parallels that should be drawn or could be drawn between the political climate at the time of the Bund and rhetoric today?
Yeah. So these extreme right-wing groups, they always sort of remind me of the main character in one of these slasher movies. Just when you think you've gotten rid of them, the killer always pops up from under the bed or out of the closet or something like this. It does seem to crop up from time to time based on various social conditions in the country. In the 1930s, it was the Great Depression. The rise of communism in this country was another reason why a lot of people, some people turned to the German-American Bund. Today's discussions about immigration have brought up many of those feelings and have brought many of these right-wing groups back out into the open more.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
That was WPR's Judith Sears Poisson talking with filmmaker Marshall Curry and historian Mark D. Van Els, who's a native of Wisconsin. Their short documentary features archival footage of a Nazi rally in New York before the start of World War II. Just ahead, the National Resources Management Act recently passed in the House. We'll find out how it impacts public lands across the nation. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.